another episode of Bitches Love Sports. I'm Bitch 2.
I'm Bitch 1.
And as you can see, we're going to talk about the Cowboys.
Hey! If it wasn't clear.
If you can't see that, that means you are not watching on Spotify or on YouTube. But if you were, you would see that I am in a Cowboys crop top. The camera's a little too high for you to see that it's a crop top, but it's got Cowboys across the top.
It's really cute.
And a star, and it is a crop top. And S. Payne is here in her Ezekiel Elliott jersey. And I'm pretty sure that we're going to add a Micah Parsons jersey to that collection.
Ooh, so soon. Pretty soon. Just wait for it. It's coming.
So
I gotta show my love for Micah too. I mean,
of course.
If I don't show it enough.
I need to do that too. Like I rep CD as much as possible. I do, but like I gotta show Micah some love here and there because he's killing it. But yeah, I'm sure y'all can't wait to get to the Cowboys, and we can't wait to get to the Cowboys, so let's get through these shout-outs and call-outs. First shout-out goes to Violet Crown Roller Derby. Violet Crown completed our first competitive travel event that involved multiple rule sets. And we won both events, even though we had short rosters for both. So I am very proud of the teammates who came through. I am super, super grateful to the people who filled in for us. I'm super, super grateful to the people who tried out, and even though it was short notice for them, still decided to come and make this trip with us.
Yeah.
Thank you to everybody who came and was a part of those victories.
Yeah.
So in the first game, we played according to the WFTDA rule set and won that game 176 to 154. Great Train won MVP overall. Diamond won MVP Jammer, and I somehow got MVP Blocker.
Just wait now to tell me this?
Sorry. I didn't think I did that great, honestly. But yeah, I got MVP Blocker. Yay.
Literally, we were talking about, I'm like, how was Phoenix? And we, for like 30 minutes, talking about Phoenix and never once mentioned.
It's not that I'm not grateful, but since I didn't feel like I had a good game, it just didn't feel like a significant thing.
You could have still told me though.
If I had like skated great and I was just like, oh my God, it was so wonderful. Like I did this thing that I never did before and like this came out the toolbox, I would have like talked about it. But it was like, I was just like, I don't know why they voted
congrats.
Me MVP Blocker.
I'm very happy for you. That's really cool.
Thanks.
I'm very, very happy for you.
Thank you. Yes. And thanks for the people who voted me MVP Blocker. Hopefully y'all actually voted for me for that because of my blocking. You know, sometimes people have weird reasons for voting MVPs.
I mean, come on now, dog.
Also, if you're watching, yes, the camera is slanted. I don't really know what to do about that. I have no interest in doing anything about it right now. It's whatever.
But it's also amazing, like, all the three black women got fucking MVPs. That's really fucking
cool.
We were
actually on the track together a lot.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah, in the USARS bout, we won, but I don't remember what exactly the score was. I just know we ended up winning by 4 points because we were up going into that jam following an amazing jam by CJ, who got 100% lead during the USARS game.
Nice. Good job, CJ. Of course.
Yes. He's amazing. If you follow Violet Crown on social media, you've probably seen CJ before. In almost every video that we have posted, he's the blur going across the screen.
Because he goes so fast.
At some point, we'll do an interview or something with him so you can actually see what he looks like.
Yes.
But yeah, so we were up and then we had like one last jam. I won't get into it. It wasn't a lineup I selected, but we had one last jam and the opposing team got lead. And luckily they were like one scoring pass short of taking the lead from us. But yeah, we still ended up winning despite also being down in numbers.
Yeah.
So thank you all the people who came out and were part of those games. And also shout out to Arizona Skate Club for putting on an awesome event. There aren't a lot of events out there that combine rule sets, because even though it sounds like, oh, you just, you know, change a couple of things, it can be tough, especially finding enough officials for something like that.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
huge shout out to the officials for, like, one of the officials actually skated in the first game and then officiated the second.
Nice. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, so huge shout out to the organizers, to the officials, to the people who came out and supported this event. Thank you. Definitely make sure you support Roller Derby in Arizona. There is WFTA, there's USARS, there's men's, there's bank track. So there is a solid derby community in the Phoenix area. And so if you are listening to this and you are in the Phoenix area, definitely support that and help them maintain, help them grow. There's going to be another awesome event in Mesa next month. So whatever you can do to support these skaters that are keeping the derby community alive and thriving in the Phoenix area, definitely support them because they are working hard on and off the track to make this sport great again.
Yeah.
And we need to, like, environments like that, we need to keep that going 100%.
Agreed.
The next shout out goes to Deion Sanders and the Jackson State Tigers football team. So they remain undefeated on the season after beating the Grambling State Tigers 66-24 this past Saturday.
There you go.
Coach Prime and his Tigers maintain their position as first in the SWAC East, and their next game is against the Delta Devils of Mississippi Valley State, who currently sit at fifth. The Delta Devils have yet to win a game this season, and I don't see that changing for them.
Nope, not this
weekend. Not this weekend. So now this shout out goes to Lincoln Riley, Caleb Williams, and the USC Trojans, who also remain undefeated this season after their 45-17 win over Fresno State. Caleb Williams completed 25 of 37 passes for 284 yards and two touchdowns, one going to Jordan Addison and the other to Malcolm Epps. Epps, that's E-P-P-S. Why? I don't know why his parents named him that. Like, I know that gets messed up. People make jokes and comments about that all the time, so.
Just make sure.
Malcolm Epps.
Yeah.
P? P. Two P's. Caleb also scored two rushing touchdowns, with Austin Jones and Travis Dye being responsible for the other two. Nice. So, yeah. So, once again, Caleb just scoring all the touchdowns. Guess he still hasn't figured out how to throw the ball to himself yet, but it's coming.
It's
I know it is.
It's coming. We're going to see it. We're going to see it at some point. Superhero.
So, the Trojans' next game is this Saturday against Pac-12 North opponent Oregon State, who is also undefeated on the season.
Nice.
And that game will take place at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, and it will be broadcast on Pac-12 networks if you have access to that. I do. I can't wait. the next thing we're going to talk about in our shout-outs and call-outs is a call-out to a certain Mr. Stephen A. Smith. Now, Stephen A. I love Stephen A. And this isn't too harsh of a call-out. It's just one little adjustment that I want to make. yesterday, he was congratulating the Las Vegas Aces on their WNBA championship win. And he made a comment about Coach Becky Hammon. And he was commenting on how great of a coach that she is, which she is. And he said that he believed that she's a good enough to coach not just the WNBA, but also the NBA. And so, Stephen A., what I want to say to you is that whenever you say things like just the WNBA, you are positioning the WNBA as being inherently less than or lower in rank than NBA. And I get it. Less viewership, smaller fan base, less money. All those things are facts. However, we just want to be careful about what we're reinforcing with the way that we're phrasing things. So you don't want to say things like just the WNBA. If you want to reference the fact that you, you could say something like that. If you want to reference the fact that you feel like she deserves to be making more money, or you wish that coaches in the WNBA got more recognition, there are several ways you could say that. So here's an example. The next shout out goes to Becky Hammon and the Las Vegas Aces for winning their first WNBA championship in franchise history. Ooh. Now, before we get into this series, I do have to give a very special shout out to Becky Hammon, who took a lot of heat for being the first WNBA head coach to break that $1 million mark. However, she has definitely earned her salary this year. Not only did she get the first WNBA championship in franchise history, this year she also won the Commissioner's Cup championship. She also became an all-star head coach, and she had the number one overall record in the WNBA. Now, $1 million, of course, that was controversial in the WNBA, but honestly, it's like, if you look at what coaches are making in the NBA, if she were to coach in the NBA... Like, the lowest earning coach in the NBA is making $2 million a year. And I would have to argue, based on what I've seen, that Becky Hammon is definitely better than some of those coaches. So it's crazy to think that because of the league that she's a part of, like, her salary is lower than people who honestly aren't performing on her level and don't seem to have her skill set or her knowledge and abilities, you know?
Yeah.
So a lot of the numbers for the WNBA in terms of viewership, in terms of revenue, were up this year. I'd say we need to keep working hard to keep those numbers going up so that coaches like Becky Hammon can get their just due in terms of both salary and in terms of recognition. Mm-hmm. Because even outside of just the money itself, there are people who don't even know who Becky Hammon is or what she's accomplished, even with her time in the NBA under Greg Popovich.
I was going to say, like, she's been on this first for a minute.
Right. And so, you know, one of the amazing things about her is that, like, all throughout her basketball career, even going back to her college years, she's been acknowledged as having a great basketball mind. In 1999, she actually went undrafted, and eventually the New York Liberty brought her in just to take a look at her and have her try out because they'd seen her numbers in terms of scoring. Mm-hmm. And Becky Hammon has said herself that she didn't really look the part when it came to a WNBA player. According to her own account, she said she was not tall or athletic enough to be drafted. But somehow she was out here getting points, right? Which a lot of people attributed to her amazing basketball mind. So it seems like that great basketball mind carried her through the WNBA, got her an awesome position under Greg Popovich with the San Antonio Spurs for a while, and now it landed her this well-deserved position with the Aces and record-breaking salary in terms of WNBA coaches, which I really do hope lures other very capable coaches to the WNBA, because not it's only
first,
does...
Is the first time Vegas gets a professional winning from a professional team in sports? Vegas, out of all
out of all their sports franchises. Yes. It's the first time the city itself got any sort of championship.
Yeah.
And not only that, but if you watch their style of play, all the physicality that we've been wanting to see from the WNBA that we expected to come from other players and that we've seen hints of from other players, I would say this is my first time seeing it on a consistent basis from one team and seeing it ramp up, like, over the course of the entire season. And I honestly think that the way they played their game is what forced the Connecticut Sun to even step up their game and bring more physicality.
Oh, yeah.
And honestly, that's what you need. Like, last week, we talked a lot about how Serena did that for tennis, mm-hmm. how her physicality forced other tennis players to really set their game up. And I think that's what we're in the process of seeing with the WNBA. Not that there haven't been physical players, but, you know, or even instances of physical play. But I'm talking about, like, just consistent. Play after play,
team.
Game after game, mm-hmm. that being part of the identity mm-hmm. of a team.
Yeah.
I personally haven't seen anything quite like this. Yeah. And I attribute it a lot to not only what Becky Hammon is teaching them to do on the court, but also to what she's doing in terms of the overall culture, both on and off the court.
Mm-hmm.
So she's definitely earned the accolades. She's definitely earned the salary. And I think she can be put right up there, you know, among 100%. Some of the best basketball coaches, whether they're in the WNBA or the NBA.
Mm-hmm. I love the, because we say this a lot too as coaches, and like I know I do say it a lot, like, we're going to play our game. I don't care what the other team is doing. We know what we're doing, and this is our game. We're not going to let them... We're not going to play their game. We're not going to let them get in our heads or whatever. And, like, if they play faster than us, we're going to play faster because that's... No. And I like that she's, like, made that culture of, like, the entire team is like, no, this is our game. We're playing how we've been training, and this is our game. And you're going to play how we play. We're going to make you play our game. And I love that. That was just amazing to watch. It was so good.
Yeah. And also building a culture of them holding each other accountable.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, Asia Wilson has historically had these moments where she, you know, have these up games and then she'd have a game where she disappeared. And you could see during the season how those games where Asia Wilson's presence kind of disappeared, you could see how those games were becoming fewer and further in between.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, but, you know, even Asia Wilson herself talking about how she found her voice and how she had to remember who the fuck she is, you know, things like that. Those come from a culture.
Oh,
a culture comes from leadership.
Right.
You know, Asia Wilson feeling like she could take the initiative and assume the authority to tell one of her teammates to get their shit together.
Yeah.
That's something that even on some very good teams, there are players who consider themselves leaders, but they won't be that frank and that honest and keep it that 100 with their teammates.
Oh, yeah.
all that comes from having a culture where we know what the goal is. We're on the same page, and so it's like whatever I say to you as a teammate, you understand why I'm saying it because we're on the same page about what the goal is.
Did you see her in the last timeout?
What? Yelling at Kelsey?
No, well, at the whole team. We're not done yet! We're not done yet! Stay locked in! Stay locked in! And it was like 10 seconds left and they were up at like 8. Like, there was no fucking way that they were coming back. And she came into the bench at the time. I was like, we're not done here. We're playing these last 10 seconds.
That is a mentality you
That's
have
what I'm
to
saying.
Have.
Like what you were saying, like, keep your, like, people accountable and your teammates accountable. Like, we're not done yet. Like, if we can get 3 more baskets in this 10 seconds, we're going to get 3 more buckets. And that's just how it is. It was good. It was really good to see that.
Yeah, so I really like what I saw from this team. Bouncing back from a disappointing loss in the playoffs last year to all the controversy with bringing Becky Hammon on to everything that happened with Liz Cambage at the beginning of the season. If you notice, ain't nobody talking about her no more, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this team, like, we've literally watched it blossom in terms of on the court presence, the way the most talented players on the team have been supporting each other, the way that they followed the lead and all gotten into lockstep in terms of the team culture, and even the way the brand has developed over the course of the season. We're watching this team blossom before our eyes. And did you see the clip of there were people at the Raiders game? The Las Vegas Raiders game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, there were people at the Las Vegas Raiders game. Stadium was full, and they put it up on the Jumbotrons around the stadium. Yeah, they put the last few seconds of the game, and that
cool.
The team won the championship, and the crowd went crazy.
That's fucking awesome. That's
Vegas
awesome.
Really loves this team.
That's awesome. That's really fucking cool. That's cool. When you see that after so many years of fighting for, like, women's sports, and you just see that even if it's the last few seconds of a game, on a football game, like that's a big step forward.
Yes,
let's
so
keep it that way.
Huge shout out to Coach Becky Hammon.
Yeah.
And Stephen A. Smith. That is an example of how you can talk about a WNBA coach. It doesn't have to be 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if y'all know this, and this is a call out to everybody at ESPN, but I don't know if y'all know this, but you can talk about the WNBA for more than like 45 seconds.
We do it.
Yeah.
It's doable. we're proof. That is doable.
Like, you know, I know it might feel uncomfortable, might feel a little weird, you might, you know.
I mean, the same research and the same games, the same shit that you do for any men's team, you can still do it for any women's
Some
team.
Of the stuff that they talk about, they don't even...
They don't even know.
They don't even have to research it. Like, I listened to a whole segment on First Take today and them talking about who has the biggest rivalry in the NFL, which is an interesting topic, don't get me wrong, but it's just like stuff like that like takes zero thought. That's like, you can't take like 45 seconds
that's
of
a
that
debate.
And,
that's a debate.
And
that's
spend
not
it
news.
Talking about
yeah but the, like, the, but that's a debate, that's not news, that's not that's just talking about sport, that's not bringing any news to the audience. Like, we can talk about that too for our whole episode.
We could. Or even like how so many people are like debating who's gonna win the Super Bowl. I'm like, yo, it's week 2.
It's week 2. What the fuck?
Week 2 just ended. Like, yo. But you know, apparently that is more interesting to a lot of people than
We need to change the narrative.
Than women winning a championship.
And even if it's like 2 to 5 minutes at a time, we still need to change the narrative.
100%. All right, and so along those lines, I do also want to give a shout out to Asia Wilson, who won Defensive Player of the Year and WNBA MVP this year. So shout out to her, shout out to the Aces, you know, shout out to the Sun for making it a good series. You know, they didn't get swept, props to them.
Yeah.
And like Jonquel Jones and Dwana Bonner.
Man.
Like the way this series turned out is not, in my opinion, an accurate reflection of everything those two have to offer on the court.
Agreed.
It's just circumstances, man. But those two are unbelievable, and I still thoroughly enjoy watching them play.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, a big part of the reason why the Connecticut Sun weren't swept is attributed to Dwana Bonner especially. Because when she was on the court, it seemed like they finally had an answer for Chelsea Gray.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it was like 2 games in a row that people were like, nobody can do anything about Chelsea Gray. And Dwana Bonner was like, I have something to say about that. You know? And then ultimately, you know, the Aces, they came back and won. But
on the road, as Pop says, the sweetest wins.
Exactly. So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing how all this plays out next season. I think we're going to see some major shakeups next season. Sue Bird has retired, you know, which leaves room for somebody else to like really take the mantle in terms of being like the face of the WNBA, which I'm anticipating that being Asia Wilson, honestly. It's like she's got star power. She's got skill. Her team just won the championship. I really see her being the face, you know, next season moving forward.
I wouldn't mind.
You know, we're also going to see some very different things from the Phoenix Mercury. You know, they held a roster spot this year for Brittany Griner. And I think next year we're finally going to see what the identity of the team looks like now that they're ready to say like, okay, we kind of have an idea of what's happening with that situation.
Right.
So here's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
Dallas Wings are going to have a new head coach. So we'll see what happens with them. We'll see if they take a page from the Aces book and like really go big and, you know, really throw the money at somebody to come in and change the culture. I think the Connecticut Sun are going to play all season with a chip on their shoulder.
Oh, yeah.
Because for the longest time, they were known as like one of the best teams in the WNBA. And, you know, this year they had a few chinks in their armor. So, like, I'm really, really looking forward to seeing some of the storylines in terms of on-court rivalries in the WNBA and also just like off-court developments in terms of marketing and what happens with the audience. Because this is also the first year that, like, you know, last year we saw a lot of WNBA games on Amazon Prime while football games were on mainstream television. This year, Thursday night, you had NFL on Amazon Prime. You had the WNBA on ESPN. So it's like there's some broadcasting shakeups too. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. I'm excited and I can't wait to see where things go with the WNBA next year.
It's going to be fun.
So, on that note, that brings us to the Bucks versus the Saints.
They did it again, 2 years in a row. Thank you, Saints.
They actually didn't. They almost did.
Didn't they win?
No, the Saints lost.
Are you for real right now?
Yeah. Did you not see the end of the game?
I guess not.
Yeah.
Because they were winning, like...
All right, so the Saints were tied with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for most of the game.
Oh, it was a really low-scoring game. It was like they had like two field goals like up until like, the fourth quarter or
something. The fourth quarter.
Okay.
And everything changed after the fight. And I'm going to get into what changed after the fight because I was listening to one of our old podcast episodes and we actually touched on something that I think is related to why the Saints ended up losing this game. But basically, but to get into what happened during the fight for a second, long story short, it seems like Tom Brady was talking shit. Mike Evans decided to jump in and defend him, and it ended up with another altercation slash fight between him and Lattimore.
So
now it looks like Mike Evans is going to be facing a one-game suspension and a $60,000 fine. And there are some people who are saying that Tom Brady should pay his fine, and a lot of people are saying that's not the case. Here's my thing about it, because there are people who are like, oh, well, Tom Brady shouldn't have to pay his fine. You know, it's the NFL, you know, people talk, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
I personally don't have an issue with Tom Brady talking shit. My issue is that there have been so many players who have gotten penalties for way less. We've literally seen players get penalties for looking at the opposing bench wrong. Literally. That's not an exaggeration. There have been situations where a look or a walking towards, it, like, not even towards, walking in the direction of the opposing bench in a taunting manner, quote unquote, has caused other players to get penalties.
Last season.
Yet Tom Brady is talking shit. And his shit-talking results in an all-out brawl, and he receives nothing. No penalty, no fine. We don't even know what he said. We don't even know what he said. All we know is that Mike Evans jumped in to defend him, a fight ensued, and Mike Evans got fined, and Mike Evans is going to be suspended. But I'm just like, what happens with Tom Brady when clearly he started? He was the instigator. So... not fair in my opinion, but since I hate the taunting rules of the NFL anyway, I'm not going to harp on it. I'm just saying that to call out the disparity in how these taunting penalties are assigned and how these like fines and penalties are assessed. But anyway, if you've heard anybody talking about this, you know, there's been controversy over whether or not Mike Evans should be suspended. And it seems like a big part of the reason why he was suspended had to do with the fact that this is not his first time having this kind of problem. In 2017, Evans was suspended for one game for running onto the field and shoving Lattimore in the back.
Oh, what a coincidence.
And then there was another situation between the two of them in 2020 that resulted in Lattimore being fined over $10,000 for unnecessary roughness for shoving Evans in the back. And after that, Evans ripped his helmet off. Yes, these two definitely have history. And so I guess the league was like, we're not playing with you this time. Yeah. We don't even really have to think about it. Fine, suspension. Yeah. Nice. And then also, it was a more clear violation of the rules. While the taunting penalties tend to be kind of more up to discretion, which is also frustrating because discretion means there's going to inherently be bias, right?
Yeah, for real.
There are more clear rules regarding physical contact. So, you know how I like to look up the rules. Rule 13, Section 2, Article 8, Part G, prohibits, and I quote, unnecessarily running, diving into, cutting, or throwing the body against or on a player who is out of the play or should not have reasonably anticipated such contact by an opponent before or after the ball is dead. So in other words, at any point in time. At any point in time, if you make physical contact when somebody says they shouldn't, or when it seems like a player shouldn't be expecting it, that's a violation of an actual rule.
Wow.
Also, Rule 12, Section 3, Article 1 prohibits any act that is contrary to the generally understood principles of sportsmanship, which anytime there's a fight that breaks out, people will say that that is not in alignment with the generally upheld beliefs about sportsmanship. I personally disagree. I do think that there are times where a fight is warranted, but that's just my personal opinion. It apparently is not the view of the NFL. That's fine. And this part is in an article from ESPN.com. It says, in a letter to Evans, NFL Vice President of Football Operations John Runyon wrote, after a play had ended, you were walking toward your sidelines. When you noticed your teammates engaged in a confrontation with Saints players, you ran toward that area. In other words, he wasn't already in the situation. He ran toward it. So Runyon continues, you ran toward that area on the field and violently threw your body into and struck an unsuspecting opponent who was part of that confrontation. You knocked your opponent to the ground and a melee ensued involving players from both teams. Your aggressive conduct could have caused serious injury to your opponent and clearly does not reflect the high standards of sportsmanship expected of a professional. So that was the issue there with Mike Evans. So did you actually see the fight or what?
I saw part of it, yeah.
And what do you think? Suspension warranted?
No. They didn't like, I mean, bruh.
When I saw it.
Like last year, fucking the Washington team, they fucking punched each other, their own teammate, in the fucking bench. None happened. It's because it's the same team?
I think so. Because these rules do reference... These rules do reference opponents and sportsmanship.
Well, that's some bullshit. Because you still need some sportsmanship between your fucking teammates, I would say.
Hey, they have high standards of sportsmanship.
They sure fucking seems like it.
But their standards are so high, it doesn't matter unless it's with the opposing team. No, but I agree. Because like, if I had two players who punched each other on the bench... Oh, they would both get suspended.
Right, yes. Exactly.
And we don't even have a governing body that says that has to happen. That would just be my personal...
If I see this, you're on the track, and I see this happening, I'm like, these two are not playing no more.
Yeah,
as captain, you make that decision. But I'm telling you,
go to the locker room, you're down.
Yeah, fuck that. Hell no.
I'm not going to get into that, but yeah.
So here was my thing. The game was close up into that point.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, the Bucks really started to run away.
I was going to say, that's when the Saints started to like getting a little.
And so here's where I say that something that we referenced in that previous episode, I think related to what we saw, because I think a big part of the problem was Jameis Winston becoming emotional, you know? And in the episode that I'm referencing, an episode that we released in late January, but we were talking about what it would be like if Sean Payton came over to coach the Cowboys. Uh-huh. And I was talking about how Sean Payton has this knack for taking quarterbacks that are decent or have any modicum of skill and making them great, and how he transformed Jameis Winston into what people looked at as an actual good quarterback.
Yeah.
And from watching this game, I really believe that setting the tone for the culture and setting expectations for behavior was part of that. Because I was watching this game and I almost tweeted. And the only reason I didn't tweet it was because with tweets, you only have so many characters.
Right.
And the only way I could think of to describe his play involved using a word that I knew that some people might take issue with. And it was me wanting to say that Jameis Winston is the most bipolar quarterback I've ever seen. And it was because he would make these amazing passes, like threading the needle, just getting the ball through these tight windows down the field to these receivers. And then it'll be followed up by like an interception.
Yeah.
And I was just like, why is it that he can make these amazing passes? Yeah. But then other times it's like an interception. And from watching it back and forth, I realized what it was is that he's just out there taking risks. He got emotional and he got into how some people, they can stay laser focused and they're like, we have a strategy, we're going to stick to it.
Yeah.
And other people, they get mad and they put their try hard pants on and it makes him act a little reckless. Jameis Winston started getting a little reckless. And so what happened was with him gambling on those passes, sometimes it paid off and he was able to thread the needle. And other times his recklessness caused him to not see defenders that were clearly in position to jump the path of the ball and intercept it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that came back to bite him because it resulted in several interceptions. He ended up with three by the end of the game, you know? So between the interceptions, the overthrown passes, like the gambles didn't pay off for him in the ways that I think he hoped.
Yeah.
And I definitely think Sean Payton is one of those coaches who would have pulled him to the side. As a matter of fact, my mindset coach, we did an interview with him and he has talked about how Sean Payton will take a player to the side and rip him up one side and down the other if they are not doing what they're supposed to do on the field, you know? And so my mindset coach was not a star player or a starter. So I can only imagine the kind of tongue lashing a starting quarterback would get if they're out there doing things that do not align with the competitive philosophy of what the coach is trying to do, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that's something that Sean Payton brought to the table because it's something you can do when you're a head coach for 16 years. Whereas maybe this new coach either hasn't figured out how to approach that sort of situation or has not yet developed the confidence, or maybe that's just not part of their style and they don't realize how necessary it is. Mm-hmm. But that's what I saw after that fight. I saw Jameis Winston become emotional and become just so determined to like prove something, you know, and especially like they were at home and after this fight, the Hoodats were in full effect. They loved everything about this fight. They were cheering for it. They liked seeing their team like go at it with the other team. So I'm sure that did something to fuel the fire within Jameis Winston and make him feel like, all right, like we about to go out there. We about to win this. Whereas on the other side of the field, you got Tom Brady who kept it cool, calm and collected. He threw that tablet that one time.
Oh my God.
And that was his expression of frustration during the game. And then after that, it was laser focus. Like, all right, we're here to win.
He broke the tablet last season against the Saints again. Did you see
that? Yes. Shout out to Microsoft Surface. So I saw one experienced quarterback able to keep his cool in this situation, and I saw another one become very emotional and start taking risks and basically changed up the way that they were playing in a game in a way that did not benefit them.
Yeah.
And so that to me was the biggest thing. And I hope it's something that Jameis Winston can work on because we've seen that in his character, right?
Yeah.
Even in the podcast clip that we think is so funny. You know, it's like how, like, for someone to get that worked up over a Yeti cooler and a few bags of ice, that means that's just something that's in you. That's part of his character.
Oh, yeah. That's and who
so
he that's, is.
Yeah,
that's
it's who he is. And so I feel like for him to, like, really take his game to the next level and for him to be the best he can be as a quarterback, he's going to have to find some way to keep that in check and figure out how to still do the smartest thing whenever he starts to get worked up. Otherwise, every team is going to be able to take advantage of that. They're going to pick on him. They're going to pick on his players just so they can take advantage of that and be like, all right, if we can get him worked up, we got him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's fair. I don't know. I kind of can relate a little bit to the getting fucking, like, upset and then just go fucking reckless. And
I know. A lot of our skaters can.
But when I first started doing that, I was going through a lot of shit, but my teammates came up with a word. So when I was like starting going like fucking crazy and I wouldn't realize
99% of the time, they would kind of be like, yo, reset. I'm like, oh, I didn't. I'm like, all right, cool. And then it's just like, all right, well, now I know I'm fucking up. I know I'm doing this shit that I shouldn't be doing. So let me go back to, like, my, you know, quote unquote normal self and just keep playing. But it did help me a lot. That's me personally. But I see, oh, yeah, you got all the tabs now. All the tabs are open. Anyways, I just think, like, some shit like that, like, little tweaks like that can really, 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 really help you on the field.
Yeah. I feel like I have the opposite problem.
That you never get worked up?
I don't. Oh, I say too cool.
I say too hot.
And I think it sometimes surprises people because it's like, I'll be like super, super cool. Especially like with off the track shit.
Yeah.
Like when people do stuff that upsets me and then like I respond, they don't see it coming. Because I'll literally just be in like the middle of a conversation and be like, you know what? You're done.
Yeah.
Bye. Like, just...
That's
and then I'll be like, did you just kick me out of practice? Yes. I didn't even think you were that mad. Yeah, well, I asked that's, you to stop.
That's because you don't know her. Yeah. But yeah.
But I tell people that too. Like, even people in my personal life, like, I was talking to somebody about my dating habits, and, you know, they were like, you know, I was talking to this person, they did such and such. And it's like, how many opportunities would you give somebody to do that before you did something about it? I'm like, I don't know. Because I don't have stuff like that. All I know is in the moment how I feel. And it's like, look, all I can tell you is that I will tell you if I don't like something.
Yeah.
And once I get to the point where I don't tell you anymore, it's too late. So it's like, if I tell you and you don't fix it, you just should know at any moment we could be done.
Yeah. From now on, it's on you. The ball is in your court right
exactly.
now.
Exactly. I might tell you twice. I might tell you five times. But just know, once I say it one time, at any moment after that, I could just be like, you know what?
Well, that's when we start recording. When you hit play. You don't know when the movie is ending, but it has an end.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think it backfires sometimes. On the track, it definitely does, because I think there have been times where it's like I could put a little bit more aggression into my gameplay, but I'm just like, no, we have a strategy. We have like things that we're supposed to do. I don't know. But yeah. I also think that it helps balance out people who do get too worked up.
Yeah, same. Me. Yes. That helps. When somebody is like a lot more calm than me on the track, it's so helpful. Because I'm like, and I tell the people that I'm going out with a lot, because I don't mean to, but I do scream at people on the track. But mostly because I'm deaf. And I'm also saying it because of me. Like, I'm not saying it. I'm not telling you what to do, but I'm saying it out loud. So I'm doing it too. But I have to warn people because some people get really like, oh my God, you yelled at me on the track. Like,
I don't care about being yelled at either. Like, I've had people apologize for that. Like,
I do.
Like, we'll get on off the track and they'll be like, I'm so sorry for yelling. And I'm just like, what?
Yeah.
You yelled at me? What?
Yeah. I do sometimes, because I know sometimes it just gets out of hand. And I'm some just people like, are too fucking sensitive.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just like, bro, if you tell me something and I ain't hear you, you had to yell. Whatever. I'm not sure. Did we win the jam? Cool.
No. Right, exactly.
But yeah, so I don't know. Like I said, hopefully the Saints get it together and next week we see a smarter, better composed Jameis Winston. Because if he was able to do it well, he did end up spending a lot of last year injured. So I don't know.
We'll see.
And that brings us to our Dallas Cowboys, who pulled off an upset. I didn't really consider it an upset per se. Because the Bengals, they were in the Super Bowl last year. Hell yeah. I'll say this. I'm not one of the people who thought they couldn't win. I just hadn't seen any examples of them doing what I thought that they would need to do to win.
This was a completely different Cowboys team that they showed up last
year. It was.
Week. Completely different team.
It was. And I'm wondering who you attribute that to.
Who?
Yeah, like, who do you think is responsible for the changes that we saw in the Dallas Cowboys? By the way, if you like football, but you also happen to live under a rock, the Dallas Cowboys defeated the Cincinnati The Dallas Cowboys defeated the Cincinnati Bengals with a score of 20-17 at home this past Sunday.
Yeah.
In a game that I'm honestly, like, everybody expected them to lose, mainly because Dak has been out. And what we saw offensively from them in week one was abysmal.
Yeah.
And so now we saw a different type of game. We saw them, you know, we saw them run the ball more.
Oh my gosh. We saw them
getting CeeDee involved early more.
Did you hear? So within the two first minutes of the game, he got the same targets that he did the entirety of the first game.
Who, CeeDee?
Yes. The first 2 minutes of the game.
Wait, I thought he ended up with the same... I think he got the same number of completions, because he got the same number of targets total.
Well, maybe it wasn't targets.
I think it was completions.
Else. Well, maybe it was completions.
Yeah, because last game he was targeted 11 times, and he got 2 completions. This game he was targeted 11 times and got 7 completions.
Anyways, not the point. But I don't know if I would, like, attribute it to, like, one person, but definitely not Kellen. Sorry, Neville.
Why not Kellen?
Because he's like, I just can't stand him. Like this, like this shit. Like they're like, this is what really bothers me. Like, you're winning, you're doing like you're running plays, you're doing good, and then you start doing this shit with your fucking cart. And then it's like, I can see your fucking wheels turning in your brain when it is not necessary for those wheels to be turning because we're doing good. Just keep doing what you're doing. Run the ball, pass the ball, whatever it is. Like, just don't go fucking crazy, okay? Just don't. Also, I was so fucking pleasantly surprised with, what do you call him, Rush Hour? I can't know with that fucking shit. Anyways, with Cooper Rush, I was very, very, very pleasantly surprised. He was so much calmer than I saw him last season. He seemed that he was more in sync with the team that Dak was probably the entirety of last season.
Well, yeah. And it's like, and here's the thing. A lot of people are attributing that to his history with Noah Brown. Him and Noah Brown have had a lot of opportunities to get reps in together.
Yeah.
But my thing is this. You mean to tell me Dak couldn't do the same thing with CeeDee?
Or with Noah Brown? Or with Gallup last season?
Right.
Or, like, yes, of course they can.
Now, one thing I will say is this. Because a lot of people are on the, you know, leave Cooper in. Like, let Dak ride the bench for a while train. The only reason I'm not on that bandwagon yet is because it's been one game for each of them. I don't think it would be smart to draw too many conclusions
from just one game for each of them. Because Dak has a lot of games on his back. This is Cooper's second game.
Right. So,
and he's already got 2 wins.
I would say let's see what he does Monday against the Giants. You know, let's see how things go. You know, and that's, it's like, if we start to see this become more consistent, then I might be like, okay, we need to look at some things, right? Because I don't think everybody's like, well, they're paying Dak so much more money. So it's not like the Cowboys front office does everything right. That could very well be a mistake on their part.
I'm definitely not
in this camp of thinking that because Dak makes more money, he must be the better quarterback.
No.
I think we need to see more. Dak didn't get any preseason reps. Like, there's just, but then, like we talked about last week, you rewind to last season, where it's just like towards the end of the season, it was just like, what the hell is going on? And then that last drive, going down the field to set them up for that field goal, a lot of people were looking at that like, oh no, here we go again.
Well, he gonna grab it?
Right. Well, no. Before that, Cooper Rush managing the clock and managing the plays properly.
Oh, yeah.
In order to get them into that position.
Oh, yeah.
That was a similar situation to what we saw with Dak, and Dak flubbed the situation, right? But also, Dak hasn't had a similar opportunity to redeem himself, you know? For all we know, if Dak had been in the same situation, maybe he could have done just as well as Cooper Rush. But I think what's on everybody's minds right now is that, like, our last memory of Dak in that situation was he fucked it up. And now we see Cooper in the same situation, and he handled it the way that we wish Dak would have handled it. And so a lot of people are like, oh, yeah, Coop knows what's up. But we don't know how much emphasis they might have placed on clock management that put Cooper in a position to actually handle that situation better after the fact.
No, I don't know. I saw a completely different team. Like, they came out hungry.
like running the fourth down. Yeah, like almost unheard of from the Cowboys anytime last season or so far this season. But like, and Cooper was like, yeah, fuck yes, let's fucking do
it.
Like, we were here like, oh shit, like sweating, like
James it was Morgan 2 yards. And the thing is, they needed that because like, what are the Cowboys notoriously known for? When the game does not start off well for them, the whole rest of the game ends up going downhill.
Yes. And then penalties left and right. And then all kinds of shit. But like, I don't know. I don't know if it was him being so like, yes, sure, it's 2 fucking yards. Why not? Let's fucking do it. And being calm and like, I don't know. Maybe his leadership skills are different than Dax. We've talked about this before. We don't think like Dax
is here. I think it is. There are so many people who have commented on how even killed Cooper Rush is. And yeah. I feel like if there weren't a big contrast between him and Dak in that area, there would be no reason for people to bring it up the way they do.
I agree.
But considering how often it comes up, I feel like it must be a significant contrast and it must make a significant difference for so many people to be like, oh, yes, Coop, he stays calm all the time. He's even killed. He never gets too hot or too cold. And I think that's important, especially with the Cowboys offense, that we consistently see them just responding so emotionally to doing well or doing poorly. Like, that's one thing that I wished for them most of last season and during the first game of this season. I wanted them to not respond in the extremes to when they started doing well or doing poorly. I wanted them to be in that place where, you know, they took things one play at a time and didn't let anything get to them in that way, good or bad. And I saw that for the first time, and we saw what that produced in terms of their offensive numbers and the ultimate win. And I feel like that has a lot to do with Cooper Rush. That is 100%. That is one area where I will say, even though I need to see more from him in other areas, that is one area where I'm like, I've seen enough for me to feel like he's superior in that area, at least alone.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, to me, like, he was doing a lot of shit that I have not seen from Dak. And he did it in, like, one game. He ran the ball. He got rid of the ball so much fucking quicker than Dak does. He pretty much sees the holes on the offense, so he's just like, I'm either running or getting rid of this ball, like, whatever it is. But, like, I don't know. Maybe his thinking is quicker than Dax. I don't know what it is, but I was pretty pleasantly surprised with that performance from Cooper Rush. Fucking TP killed it. Fucking Tony. You know, I love you, Tony. I wouldn't mind getting that 20 jersey either. I love Tony. Like, everybody fucking killed it. CD, like, everybody fucking killed it. Armstrong, like, that fucking defense that... Whoa, like, where is all these people? What were y'all last week? Like, what the fuck? Like, you know, I don't know. It was a completely different team. Like, it was, and the kicker, all kicks, all of them, from all over them. 50 yards. Like, anyways, thank you for making us believe again.
Here's the one bit of credit that I will give to Kellen Moore. So, it was up to him to make that decision to run the ball more in the beginning, you know? And so I'll give him that. Now,
I don't know how much... Why didn't he do that with fucking Dak, though?
Well, see, that was going to be my question. I don't know how much of a role the QB plays in saying, this is what I want to do. So there are some people who are saying, like, oh, because you have a backup in there, you have to lock it down a little bit more. And so you don't really have as much room to be creative. Whereas maybe with Dak, he felt like he could be more creative and the team, because of skill, would pull it off. And to that, I would say, I feel like after a few weeks of that shit, you should realize that's not a good plan.
Correct.
You know?
Or seasons. Because, like, you've been there seasons too with Dak.
You can't Expelliarmus your way out of everything, Neville. Like, no. That's not what this is.
No.
Sometimes you just need to run the damn ball.
Yeah.
So I'll give him a little bit of credit for doing what needed to be done.
I still don't like
But him. I also don't want people to get too high on this victory, because at the end of the day, it was once again our defense that saved the day.
100%.
And it did end up, you know, it was kind of close for a second.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying?
The last half of the fourth quarter, like, whoo, we were struggling because the Bengals were, like, they were getting a lot of momentum and they were, like, coming in hot. And it was an interesting last 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's like, had we not had just enough time to get down the field and set up for that field goal, and he made it, yes. 50-yarder.
Yes.
Could have been a tie game, and then who knows what happened.
Yeah.
Because, like, we didn't score at all in the third quarter, no. You know? And then the Bengals came back and they scored again in the fourth quarter. Like, they got the 2-point conversion, which was kind of easy. And so, like, it was tied literally until the last second. So mm-hmm. while I'm proud of us for getting the win and I like what I see from the offense, I just hope people don't get so high on it. Like, oh my God, like, now we are, you know, ready to make a playoff run. Like, no, we still do have a lot of work to do. Yeah. Right. But yeah, I do like the direction that we're going in, I'll say. So on that note, let's talk about this defense and Micah Parsons. People have been talking about whether or not Micah might be the best player in the NFL right now. And
I said that last season.
Yeah. So he was amazing, right? And I'm going to pull up a video from Brian Baldinger, who always does like his play-by-plays after the Sunday. And he did one on Micah Parsons because he loves Micah Parsons just like I love Micah Parsons. Doesn't. He also loves CeeDee Lamb just like I love CeeDee Lamb, but he hasn't done a breakdown of CeeDee Lamb yet. But he did one of Micah, so I'm going to pull that up real quick because I noticed some things, and I'm going to see if our brains are on the same wavelength to see if you notice some of the same things.
Okay.
So let me pull that up real quick. Because it's like, Micah is amazing, but also there were some things on the other side that kind of had me like,
Okay.
I wonder if what he's doing would work in the same way against another team.
Micah Parsons, Lyle Collins were friends last year, but you wouldn't know it on Sunday. It's the MPP. It's the Micah Parsons problem. Like, just get out of my way. And the thing about, like, a lion is you can't get him off their feet. He's never on the ground. And then when he tackles like a lion eats. That's why at the end of this play, he's rubbing his stomach because he's getting fed. But he's an equal opportunity abuser. So Jonah Williams on the other side, he's going to feel it. Like, Micah has 20-plus sacks in him, and he tackles the way a lion eats. And then he makes things better for everybody else around him. Like right here, he's going to come and just run Dorrance Armstrong over. He can't believe that he didn't come up with that loose ball. He didn't sleep last night. I promise you. He didn't sleep. That's not about the win, the sacks. He didn't sleep. Joe Mixon took that ball away from him. That ticked him off. Now you get Dorrance and you get Micah on the same side. Twist done. Here he comes, just pressuring the middle. Moving Joe Burrow right here. He ain't going to be finding Jamar Chase like that, running backwards. Micah got that one started. And then you get this right here. The MPP effect. The Micah Parsons effect. Like, he turns, like, that spin right there, that spin is lethal. Now, what's Joe Burrow going to do? He's not staying on that spot. He's moving. And there comes Van Der Esch to clean up. Like, everybody else is eating as a result. Now, here's the scheme. This is Dan Quinn right here. He put 7 up at the line of scrimmage. There's Jamar Chase. That's where the ball is supposed to go. Except here comes Micah free off the scheme. Like, Joe Burrow's not completing that ball with the MPP coming right at him. It's beautiful stuff. And then he turned Lyle Collins into a turnstile. Like, look at him just glide. Like, that's uncommon. You don't find guys like that. Yeah. If they leave that end, he's going to set the NFL sack record. Like, Joe Burrow, like, he's reading the rush because of those hits. See these hits right here? There's no quarterback that can withstand this stuff. Bam.
Yeah.
Like, that stuff hurts. Micah Parsons is a problem.
Well, he's a flat the best. Out problem, there was
no matter where he lines up.
Great tackle from Diggs.
The Cowboys are lucky to have.
Yeah, right there.
Oh, yeah, I'm super proud of Trayvon Diggs, and yeah. I'm going to get to his tackle in a second.
That was huge. That was a huge part of the game and a huge part of our win.
Yeah.
Our win, because we all played.
I'm really proud of Trayvon Diggs and that tackle, because for a while he had been getting criticism about, like, not tackling and not being physical enough, and I'm going to get to that in a second. But I was wondering, what did you notice about how Micah was moving in that clip?
CJ.
I wasn't going to say directly CJ, but I was going to say, yeah, he looks like a jammer. Yeah. He looks like a jammer. And so that's what got me.
CJ, because CJ's, he looks reckless. but he knows what he's doing.
Exactly.
That's why I'd say it's CJ. Like, there's not a lot of jammers like him out there. The same way that there's nobody in defense like Micah.
I've definitely had to defend CJ in that regard to officials who are like, oh, he's out there reckless, he's jumping everywhere, and I'm just
like, he knows where he's going. Yes, exactly.
I was like, if somebody jumps in his path, then yes, that might be an issue because he can't change direction in the air, but I was like, trust me, he's not being reckless. Yes. He's just very fast, and he's got hops. Yes. I don't know what to tell you.
Like people in Derby are not used to that kind of jamming.
Not at all.
That's just how it is. But anyways, yeah, he looks like a jammer to me.
Yes, he looks like a jammer. And what did that offensive line look like? To me, they look like, you know how I'm always telling our blockers, like, yo, make sure that you're next to each other because otherwise you create that vertical hole. That's what I saw. Yeah. And that's what all the defenders were able to spin through. And that's why, like, a lot of people were like, didn't the Bengals spend a lot of money on their offensive line? Yes, they did. But the thing is, you can have a lot of individually good players, but if they don't know how to stand next to each other, like, you create spaces for people to spin through. Like, I said
this so many times on the pod. One person does not make the team. You can have a whole team of the most talented players of any sport. That doesn't mean they're going to win, and that doesn't mean the team is going to be the best just because individual players are the best. If they don't know how to play together, it doesn't matter how good they are.
So, like, look at this giant hole right there. Uh-huh. Even if he hadn't been taken down, look, there's a space right there for the next person to get to him. Yeah. Two people could go through that hole. Look at this one.
Yeah.
This person comes way out here. So.
Yeah.
There's nobody there. He's jumped on this man.
Give me a biggie right back.
So, look at this one. They start off lined up. They're next to each other.
That's it.
And look, Micah breaks right through the seam. Uh-huh. Why? Because they collapse. That's not even a pocket anymore. That's just three dudes trying to stop Micah. And just like a jammer breaks through the seam.
Yeah.
See, this is exactly... I was watching this. I was like, this is exactly what a jammer would do. Yeah. Like, because it's like you do see a lot of people try to go up against offensive linemen and try to push the person out of the way.
Yeah.
And you can see clearly Micah is like, I don't need to fight these people. I just need to get to the hole.
Yeah.
And he's like, fuck who it is. I don't care if it's two people, it's three people. I will find the hole and I'm going to go straight through it. And that's exactly what he does.
Yeah.
And so people are like, how is Micah getting past two and three people? I think this is like one really good example of it. No, that's an example of him.
Going in between two people going
in between two people. But there was definitely one where he like pushed like two or three people out of the way at one time.
Yeah.
And people are like, how does he do that? It's because he's not trying to push the two and three people out of the way. He looks for the weak spot between those people. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, even if it's the two of us and a smaller jammer comes between us, if they go for you, you might be able to hold them a lot easier. Whereas if they go for this, unless one of us gets in front of them, it's going to be a lot easier to bust through our two shoulders than it's going to be to push either one of us, you know? Yeah. And that's what Mike is taking advantage of. And then as far as Lyle Collins, you can easily see, especially in this last one, why he was able to take advantage of Lyle Collins. If you watch a lot of Micah's footage from last year, almost all of it was him going around the outside and then going into the pocket from the top. And you can tell Lyle is anticipating that. And what did we say before the season started? We were like, we believe that Micah is already working on what he knows people are going to do, and he's already figured out new moves to take advantage of how they're going to defend against his old moves. Mm-hmm. And you can see it right here. Micah leads him.
He expects
Lyle to turn to the right, and Lyle's anticipating. You can tell he's practicing. He's like, I'm going to follow you through that pocket. And Micah's like, yeah, I know you are. And that's why I'm going to stop and cut back in through the hole because y'all got too many holes among your offensive linemen. And now your back is to me. There's no way you're going to catch me now.
Yeah.
And you see him do that on both sides a lot,
where he
gets them thinking he's going to go one direction around them and he jukes and cuts back in.
Yeah.
And so people are like, he's so fast. And it's like, not only is he moving faster than them, he's thinking faster than them. They're preparing for the 2021 version of Micah Parsons. And Micah Parsons like, no, new year, who this?
Yeah, right. I don't know. I feel like every time I see him play, he's so honed in and he like has a plan. Every time he's out there ready to go, he has a plan and he has a goal. And the goal is either like fuck up their O-line or just get the sack, whatever it is. But he does have a goal. And like anything in between the whistle or the whistle, the snap of the ball or whatever, and him getting to the goal is just cones to him.
That's exactly.
It. That's it. It's an obstacle course to him until he gets to his goal that he just set in his mind right before the ball was snapped.
Even
that's
this.
It.
Look how he puts his upper body on the defender and then gets his hip around.
Mm-hmm.
It's like he's been watching derby footage. Like, I swear. When I saw that, the way he pulled that left leg through and got those hips around,
uh-huh.
I was like,
don't
oh my
me,
God.
Yeah.
Like, I could literally learn jammer moves from watching Micah play defense.
Yeah, for real.
When he breaks through that seam,
mm-hmm.
cuts through. Like, I love it. I love all of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, super proud of Micah, but I really want to see if these moves work against an offensive line that's a little bit more cohesive. It'll be interesting to see what he develops as the season goes on.
Yeah.
And same thing with our offense. You know, like, I'm so proud of this team for pulling off that win because they needed it. Mm-hmm. The fan base needed it. But I see more opportunities for building. I don't see this as a sign that, like, oh, our team has arrived. I see a lot of things that we can build on.
Oh, no, yeah, 100%. 100%. I don't know. I feel like maybe because it was Rush out there instead of Dak, that the O-line was like, yo, we really, really need to get our fucking shit together. If we don't, you know, like, we really need to defend, quote-unquote, this quarterback and, like, protect him more than Dak, right? Because he's mm-hmm. not as used to being out here as Dak is. Which, cool, yeah. But do the same thing when Dak is out there. Like, I don't understand why you have to switch your mindset into, like, oh, we really need to protect this one.
I think that might have just been a matter of time and experience.
The O-line, well, I mean, it's a new O-line. I guess we have to wait until Dak is out there again.
Because it's like, you got to think. It's like, we're not talking about a team that practices twice a week for 2 hours in between, like, each week, the way that we do, because we have lives and we're not being paid millions of dollars to be at our team.
Correct.
We're talking about players who, in between games, they spend hours watching footage. Yeah. Hours just discussing their own position. Yeah. Days practicing. So it's just like, there's a lot of progress that can be made over that amount of time, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, that's fair, but I mean, I don't know. I would love to see that O-line stay like that and progress from this last game until the end of the season. Whether it's Dak, whether it's Rush, whether it's Greer, whoever.
Well, we're going to be getting Jason Peters soon. Michael Gallup is going to be back.
I know. I'm so fucking ready. He's one of my favorites.
So, I mean, if those players alone bring to the offensive side of the ball what people anticipate, we're going to see some amazing things regardless.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that it actually leads to improvement and doesn't lead to, like, oh, now we got to make more adjustments. You know, both of those players are experienced and both of them are very, very good at what they do. So I don't think it'll be nearly the adjustment, you know.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. Yeah, I didn't think about it that way. Yeah.
So I do think the team will keep improving. I just don't want them to look at this and, like, rest on their laurels and be like, oh, yeah, we're here now. Like, no.
No.
Watch the film. Yes. Keep working. I trust that Micah is watching film because as great as he did, I promise you that there are moments that he's not satisfied with. And I think he's also smart enough to realize that, like, yeah, they left some giant holes for him to jump through. And, like, basically on each end, like, he was being defended the same way. So it's like, if he could get them spinning, it was just like,
That's it. Mm-hmm.
But now that people have seen that, and now you see this breakdown, one, not only are you going to see some more cohesive offensive lines anyway, but now you're going to see people who are a little bit more prepared for that.
Mm-hmm.
And so they might not spin in the same way. They might find a different way.
True.
To, you know.
You're just going to think that Micah is always working on his craft.
Always.
At all times.
It's
when,
like,
he's sleeping, he's probably dreaming about a new drill, how he can fix
something. I mean, what did we
like.
Learn about him last season? He likes chess, right?
Uh-huh.
And he's always two steps ahead.
Yeah.
So, like, figuring out how to defend against him, defend against a defender, like, wow. But figuring out how to protect your quarterback from him is like playing a game of chess. If you watch footage from week two and you figure out how to solve that problem, he's already figured out how to attack against whatever you would have figured out to solve that problem. So now you have to anticipate what he might do in response to your solution and prepare for that. And hope that he doesn't already have something prepared for that. Well,
and not just that, like, he still has all the tools in his toolbox from last season as well. So just because you're learning or you think that you know how to stop his new move, he still has the old moves in too.
Exactly, so, which we did see a little bit of that
too. Exactly, that's what I'm saying. Like, just because you're ready now, like the guy, like the blocker. Anyways, you know, like, it's like, oh, I know what you're about to do.
I mean, he is a blocker. Yeah. That's not what they call him, but
yeah. It's a blocker. Anyways, like, I know what you're about to do. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, haha, JK. And then the next play is like, I'm gonna do what you thought I was gonna do the play before, you know, like it, anyways, I'm overthinking it, but you know what I'm getting, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, but that's interesting. When I was watching him play, I was like thinking Freight Train the whole time, and now I'm thinking CJ.
Yeah, because I feel like Freight is a lot more calm and collected on the track. CJ is hot and just like, whoa! And just go. It's like an explosion of energy at all times, which is Micah, in my opinion.
Yeah. No, agreed. I think mentally and emotionally, Micah is a little bit more collected. But as far as, like, what you see when you watch them play.
Right. Look, I'm talking about the style of play, not up here. Up here, he's a lot more like Frey than he is like CJ, for sure, 100%.
And last but not least, what do we think of our receiver core now? People were saying that there were questions, and now I think they look a lot better.
I mean, we got some TDs, so I guess you can say that we're doing better.
Speaking of which, so I have this box here next to me.
I was waiting for that.
And I think I know what's in it. So last week, I had a really rough week, and there was a day where I was especially exhausted, and somehow I ended up on the Dallas Cowboys Pro Shop website. And I woke up and I send bitch one a message basically saying that I just bought the tackiest thing ever. Now, I think it's in this box and I'm going to unbox it just so we can enjoy this moment together because I haven't seen it in person. And the reason why I said it's tacky is not because it's a bad piece of merchandise. I honestly think I must have meant to click on something else and I just ended up clicking on this. And when I got the email confirmation that I had ordered it, I was just like, what? What the fuck did I order? So it's like, it's just something that's not my style.
But we shall see.
But it was on sale. So it's like, it's one of those things that's easier to keep it than return it. Oh my God.
Okay. Oh, Lord.
It's like big. So now I have.
Yeah, okay. Oh my God, you guys. If this is what it looks like. Oh my God, Lethal.
Oh goodness. What am I even gonna do with this thing?
You're gonna enjoy a lot of time on the couch.
So now I have this
really warm
giant blanket. With CD Lamb on it.
Oh my God.
So if you know me, as much as I love CeeDee Lamb, this is not something I would ever buy. This goes with none of my decor.
It goes with your t-shirt.
No, I'm going to take this home.
This is fucking amazing. This is like so fucking good.
Oh, and Dallas Cowboys Pro Shop, y'all need a better return policy. I'm like, if I drive up to Frisco, can I give this back? I'll trade it in for something else. I will trade it in for something else with CD's name on it. But yeah, this is... If you're ever looking to buy me... Like, oh my God. This is... I can't.
It's a lot.
I might bring this with me next time I go back to Frisco and just be like, is there anything I can do? Can I, like, get credit towards a jersey? But luckily, I don't get a lot of company. So outside of whoever might watch this, nobody will know that this exists in my home.
So, signed and everything.
Yeah, it's signed and everything. If I can get CD to sign it for real, I'll keep it.
Oh, I mean, shit. For real, though. Fuck.
Like, you want to touch it? It's really comfortable.
It's really, really
It is really, really soft. It feels good.
Yes. It seems like it's good material.
Yeah, it does feel really good. It's just, it's a giant blanket with CD Lamb on it, which is kind of weird. Like, my style would even be more of like, even if it had like a giant star in the middle.
That's what I was expecting. Yeah. When you said,
If it was something like that, I wouldn't have even had a problem. I'd have been like, I bought this blanket for some reason.
Said a CD Lamb blanket, that's what I was expecting. It was like a giant star, maybe the helmet with the 88 on it.
That's why I said it's the tackiest thing ever, right?
The whole picture.
it's like a giant picture of CD on a blanket. I'm just like, no wonder it was on sale. Who's gonna buy this? Nobody's running around, like, you know, on the beach or at a picnic with this. Like, we're just gonna eat lunch sitting on CD's face.
You know how the tables have turned within a split fucking second, huh? When you put it like that, getting high here, huh?
Okay, on that note.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else?
That was the best ending of any episode so far.
Well, the Cowboys' next game is against the Giants in New York on Monday night. So I think I might take that trip to Arlington.
Yeah.
See what Texas Live is like on a Monday night. See what's popping.
I don't know what I will be doing. I'm looking for jobs. I'm working quite a few side hustles and side gigs, so I don't know what I'm gonna be doing tomorrow. So.
We shall see.
We shall see.
But in the meantime, I'm Bitch 2.
I'm Bitch 1.
And we out.
Bye.